Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen.
Hello and welcome back to the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. And today I'm joined by someone who has mastered the art of building businesses that put people first. From scaling an automotive startup to over $600 million in annual revenue in just 5 years, to co-founding global investment partnership in international venture spanning real estate and cryptocurrency. He has proven that when you create an unforgettable customer experience, success follows. He's now the founder of Aim High, where his mission is simple yet powerful, helping leaders increase profit by putting the customer back at the heart of business. Our guest today, Dan Daly. Welcome to Successes. Dan, how are you?
It's great to be here, Phil. I'm doing well, thanks.
Yes, let's kick it off with the opening question. What does success mean to you?
Yeah, you know, when you asked me that on our pre-show, I thought it was such a dynamic question, you know, because it sounds kind of simple, but when you think about it, it's really a deep question. Yeah. And, you know, I thought about it, and to me, success was really the freedom to design my life around my passions, my purpose, and impact, and being able to help others do the same.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to hear a little bit about your janitor story. So you started off as a janitor and quickly decided that wasn't for you. I'd like to hear a little bit about that story and then how it, you know, impacted your success later on.
That was not success is that, but it was the beginning of where I am today, really, right? Because what it did was it put me in a place where I realized really quickly I didn't want to be. I didn't have a purpose there. I didn't have a passion for it. And I wasn't impacting my own life or others around me. So, you know, I came out of high school and I was kind of at that age where I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do next. And my dad was kind enough to help me out and he got me into the local union. And I was basically a janitor, right? From 10 at night till 6 o'clock in the morning, working the midnight shift because I was the new guy and that's all that they had available for me. And not long into that gig, one of the old timers came up to me and he said, "Oh, I see you're a lifer now." And I kind of scratched my head. I didn't really understand what the term meant. You know, I said, "Paulie, what do you mean? What's a lifer?" He goes, "Oh, well, you're here for the rest of your life."
Oh no.
And yeah. Oh no. Like, you know, like hit me like a ton of bricks. I got goosebumps right now telling the story still. I've told it 10,000 times because it's just had such an impact on my life. And shortly thereafter, I quit, right? And dad wasn't really too happy about that. He had pulled a lot of strings to try and help me out. He said, "Great, what are you going to do now?" I said, "I don't know, Pop, but I'm not going to do that," right? So early on, I believed in myself, even though I might not have had a solid strategy. And I jumped in the deep end, said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do next, but I will figure it out. And I've listened to that voice throughout my career and I've gotten better and better at listening to it. And shortly thereafter, I had a guy that I knew was running an automotive dealership. And he said, "Well, you know, why don't you come sell cars? You'd be great at it." I said, "Dude, I'm not a car salesman." You know, like I was kind of insulted. You know, they didn't have the best reputation. Long story longer, and 20 years later, I got into sales and it became my passion. It was automotive sales. And I love the idea that every day I can meet different people. I could talk to different people. I was learning something new in an environment that was constantly changing. And I did that for 20 years and I worked my way up the career ladder from sales to finance manager, sales manager, general sales manager, general manager. At the time, I was one of the youngest general managers in the country. And then about 6 years ago, went to work for a startup automotive group here in Southern California. I was employee number one for a gentleman that was previously in sports entertainment and real estate, not in automotive. And he said, "Listen, here's what I'm looking to do. Looking to start this automotive group. You know, you're kind of the expert in this space. Let's make a run at it." And we did. So we started with a really small store with less than, you know, 5 or 6 employees and 10 cars in stock. And within five and a half years, we grew that to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 dealerships and 500 employees doing $600 million annually in revenue in 5 years, which was just, you know, a rocket ship of a ride. You know, there are dealership groups that don't do that for 3 generations. And we did it in 5 years. And I was really, really proud of that. And I wanted to then pivot and do something on my own. You know, I worked all these years, Phil, for everybody else working hard. I kind of felt like I owed myself the chance to work hard for myself. And I was dabbling in real estate over the last 5 years or so. Again, not involved in real estate, but I jumped in the deep end and started buying properties in Europe, short-term rentals. And that very quickly, 5 years later, has turned into a $25 million private equity fund that specializes in international hospitality real estate that is tokenized. So it blends traditional hard assets, real estate, with, you know, the modern story of cryptocurrency. And it is a smashing success so far. We've had a lot of positive feedback to the early launch. And, you know, that's my new journey. And that's the next chapter is launching and building that international hospitality real estate fund.
Nice. So rapid ascent in the car dealership world in your 20s. I'd love to hear lessons learned, both good and bad, along that ascent, some of the rapid ascent. You know, often I hear about like the Peter principle, where people are promoted to their level of incompetence, right? So they may have been successful previously, but then they kind of reach this cap. And so it's always amazing when someone can see just rapid success and they just keep going and keep going. What do you attribute that to? And did you run into some obstacles along the way?
There's always obstacles, right? I still hit them. But, you know, somebody asked me recently how I deal with them. And being told no or being faced with an obstacle has always been a motivator for me. So that's number one, really, is my mindset, which, you know, develops early on through osmosis, through all these things we're exposed to. But I never took no for an answer. It always kind of drove me. No, you've never been a finance manager before. No, you've never run a dealership before. No, you've never run a private equity fund before. Well, now I've done all of them. So I learned really early on to believe in myself, to surround myself with good people that have done what I'm trying to do and to learn from them, which is another big one, and to just keep pushing forward and believe in myself. If I had a plan, if I had good people around me and I had a strategy, you know, sometimes it's not as hard as we convince ourselves that it might be and we psych ourselves out. So, you know, for me, those have proven to be really, really powerful motivators. Right? Obstacles to me are motivators. Let's find a different way to do it. Early on, you know, you asked about in my career, I tried to mirror what the great salespeople were doing and never do what the bad salespeople were doing, right? There were two sales guys selling the same product 20 feet apart, and one is selling 40 cars a month and the other was selling 4. Well, they both have the same opportunity, but one is obviously doing a lot better in the same environment. So I kind of stole his whole game, right? And I made it my own, put my own twist on it. I learned that you are your brand. Whatever you're selling is going to interest the customer, but you are your brand. And that followed me through my whole career and even the international hospitality real estate. It's private equity. You're raising millions and millions of dollars. So you have to have a great product, but you have to be able to build relationships with investors that believe in you, that trust you, and want to work with you. So again, surrounding yourself with great people.
Love it. So your core philosophy at Aim High is ultimately the customer is the CEO. How do you convince employees across an entire organization to adopt the customer first mindset with purpose and pride?
Yeah, the short answer is it's really difficult. Right. But if you stick with the long game, it becomes very, very profitable. The easiest way to show people that it works is to make it profitable for them, meaning how are the incentives aligned with what we're trying to accomplish? So if you want to have great customer service, but the employees have no skin in the game, meaning there's no incentive for them, there's no bonuses for them, if they reach a higher score, then, you know, they may just rise to a certain level and be comfortable there and leave it there. And for a lot of people, they're okay with being average, right? And in the customer satisfaction business for automotive, you know, we had dealerships where the national average score was in the 60s. So if the national average score was 63 and we wanted to be at 85, you know, some of the conversations we would hear as feedback was, well, our satisfaction scores are at 67. You know, we're above the national average. To me, 67 is a zero, right? It is just, it's not acceptable. If, you know, you sent your kid to school and he came home with his math test and he said, great news, I got a 67 on the test today. Isn't that great, Dad? No, you're never going to tell him it's great. So why are we doing it when we go to work for ourselves? So a lot of it is figuring out why. Why isn't anybody interested in making the experience better for the customer? And I found overwhelmingly it's two things. Number one, it's the compensation, right? If you don't align the compensation with what you're looking to achieve, you will never achieve it, period. It's just a natural motivator for most people. They want to take care of their family. They want to pay their bills. They want to send their kids to a good school. They need money to do that. So you need to incentivize people to rise. And number two is most people think that they can't become more than they already are. And, you know, what I mean by that is I saw an interview years ago with Jerry Rice from the San Francisco 49ers football player. And they just asked him, how could you be so much better than everybody else that's ever played the position? Everybody that gets to the NFL is the 1% of the 1%. How could you be 1% of that? He said, oh, that's really simple. Most people think they give 100%. Very few people understand what 100% is. And that was powerful for me. So to get to 100%, it takes a lot of time, dedication, sacrifice, commitment. I get that maybe everybody's not going to get there. But I can take you from 67 to 87. And 87 from 67 is a pretty dang good improvement, right? So that's what we kind of started doing, aligning the incentives with where do you need to be? All right, 67. If I tell them we need to be at 90, they're going to, right? They're pound sand. We're never going to get there. And I'm not going to get the effort. So let's just get from 67 to above 70. Can we get above 70? And then it's all right, mid 70s. And then it's all right, let's go for 85. And you have to keep shuffling the deck for the incentives to get people there, to push them there. And the conversations were, we're never going to get there. It's going to be impossible. We're doing things we've never done before. Within 12 months, Phil, okay, in the automotive business, which does not have the highest level customer satisfaction scores, within 12 months, four dealerships in very high profile, high demanding Southern California locations, scores above 90, four consecutive months in a row for both sales and service. So I'm not one to ring my bell for a one-hit wonder, right? But now we've got four big dealerships in prime locations hitting sales and service consistently. People were getting paid. Customers were happy. So, you know, those two things were very dynamic levers, right, to kind of pull that. You have to do it slowly. You have to be in it for the long game. But even 12 months, right, 12 months, if you ask me how long it would take us to get there, I didn't even think we could do it in 12 months. 18, 24, it takes time. But we kept pushing. And the customers are happier, right? When your customers are coming in and they're happy, it's a much better place to do work, right? You don't have somebody that's standing in front of you barking at you at 9:01 in the morning because their car wasn't ready. And that has translated right into what we're doing with the private equity fund is, how do you raise $25 million? How do you raise 35? How do you raise 50? Well, you start with one, right? You start with $1 million. And how do I build the relationships? How do I incentivize the people in my network, whether it's through referrals or partnerships? It's exactly the same playbook, right? It's just taking it from one pile and putting it into another. So very, very similar. And I think that is what has helped me be successful in whatever I've wanted to accomplish is I understand the playbook is predominantly the same. And you have to tweak it a little bit and you have to pivot here and there. But for the most part, it's about building yourself as a brand, building relationships, and incentivizing the people around you to help you get where you want to go.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I want to talk a little bit about how you began investing in Europe. about 3 years ago, right? And
yeah,
initially focusing on short-term rental units. What specific aspect of international real estate first caught your attention?
Well, first and foremost, I'm not a real estate guy, right? So my dad wasn't a real estate guy. Gramps wasn't a real estate guy. So I kept finding out that a lot of these guys were second, third generation real estate guys, and they had their 10,000 hours by the time they were 22 years old. I started at 50 years old, basically, with no real estate experience. And I was looking at commercial real estate, residential, multifamily. I had no idea. So I was really just kind of looking at what interests me and then narrowing the field down, crossing off what I wasn't interested in. Take multifamily real estate. It just didn't drive me. It didn't get me up early in the morning. It wasn't going to keep my wheels turning at night. I just wasn't interested in multifamily real estate here in the United States. And it's a great business. It's just, it wasn't for me. And I listened to that inner voice that told me, this isn't something you're going to be happy doing. So the more and more research I did, I started looking at what we talked about before, successes. What would I define success as? I would define success as being passionate and productive about something that has an impact and what makes me want to get up in the morning. So I built it around a lifestyle. And my lifestyle is, in the next 2 to 3 years, I want to be in Europe and I want to be able to move from property to property and spend 3 months in Porto and spend 3 months in Madeira and 3 months in Spain. And I just started going down that rabbit hole. Quickly, I discovered that if I was sending in a lead here in the United States, let's just say it's a multifamily unit in Cleveland, Ohio, I wouldn't get a call back from the broker for 2 weeks because there were 300 people looking at the same lead. I went over to high touristic cities in areas that are populated by multifamily units that are surrounded by hotels. And the idea was that you're competing with the hotels that are overbooked short-term rentals, is how that came out of that, right? I looked at Europe per square foot, something here in Los Angeles, right? A 1,000 square foot apartment, $1.2 million. In Portugal, I could buy four of them for the same price. So that's exactly what I did. 2023, we bought four units in 1 year. And interest rates, another competitive advantage in Europe. All of the mortgages, 25-year mortgages, 3.5% interest. That's still incredible. Today, which, you know, you look at, I didn't see what the Fed said today, but 6.8, 6.9% financing, right? So I had cheaper square footage. I had a cheaper long-term payment, right, on the mortgage. And I had a much more captive audience because I was in small radius areas that were highly touristic that people visit from all over the world. And I would send in a lead on a property, no exaggeration. I did it this morning, an hour before I got on with you. 20 minutes later, the brokers are calling me. There's no competition. So that's my edge, right? I've got a better interest rate. I've got lower square footage price. And I have brokers that are willing to work with me really quickly because it's not as a competitive environment for multifamily over there that it is over here. And then we found, you know, over the years, we found great attorneys, lawyers, property managers, bookkeepers, all here from Los Angeles. So if anybody tells you you have to be there or it's impossible to do, from my laptop in my kitchen, Phil, okay? I bought six units in 12 months and rolled out a private equity fund. Wow. So it can be done. And I love it when I hear the competition say, oh, that's impossible. You can't do that. You can't do it from here. And I heard there's so many hoops to jump through. There's a lot of hoops to jump through in Cleveland, Ohio, if you want to buy a property too, right? It's all the same. It's just your mindset. It's your perspective. So if the competition wants to psych themselves out, that's great because brokers call me back in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing when you change it from I can't do that to how do I do that? Or how can
Sir,
I do that?
It will change your life, Phil. If there's one thing, right, that anybody can take away from this or from anything, it's you can do anything. Literally. And there are a million stories of founders that have come from nothing, that believed in themselves and were smart enough to keep it simple, surround themselves with good people and achieve great things.
Absolutely. Yep. You're limiting your own beliefs.
100%.
So I want to hear a little bit about this intersection of real estate, finance, and cryptocurrency. Can you kind of walk our listeners through that?
Yeah, I mean, it's super exciting, right? I mean, what's more exciting than being able to blend something as new and modern as crypto, which everybody knows now it's not a Ponzi scheme, right? Well, I would say most people know.
An article that was talking about how banks are now, I mean, they're the biggest investors with crypto right now. I mean, you're seeing these major funds move into it, and they were initially the ones that were most reserved about it, the you know, publicly bashing it, and now they are actively involved in crypto.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get sidetracked because I can go on about it, but it's because the banks saw it as a threat. It's very simple, right? And now that they could not subdue that wave on the previous administration, and the new administration is very crypto friendly, they've kind of changed the rules. And now the banks have to get on board, right? If they're not on board, they're overboard. So that whole intersection, it was kind of like I started dabbling in these single family properties, and I was really interested in it. And I was looking at the customer reviews we were getting on booking.com. I was looking at them on Airbnb. I'm talking to the property managers. I was excited again. I had a purpose. I had a passion. And it was great to read these reviews when the customers would leave and say, you know, the apartment was amazing. The location was amazing. They thought of every single detail for our stay, right? They had free croissants delivered to us each morning from the local bakery. All of those brand building customer experience touch points that I've done my entire career now translated into this. So this whole intersection came out of how do I make real estate, which is tried and true, we all know that, as exciting as crypto, so that I can have a captive audience with a different investor. I wanted to offer something to people that maybe don't have $100,000 to invest in a property or $1 million to invest in a property. There are a lot of people out there that are in a certain financial situation where they have $1,500 to $50,000 that they want to invest in real estate, and they're talking themselves out of the game by saying, I don't have enough money, I can never afford real estate. Well, you can, because we're tokenizing the fund. So if you're in crypto and you've got, you know, $1,500 worth of ETH, and you want to take that and you want to make it your investment in real estate, we are going to help you do that. And we're going to take the crypto and it's going to be invested in the fund. And now you are part owner of a tokenized real estate asset that you can touch, you can feel, you can see it. It's online. It's real. It's not it's not investing in a fund that maybe invests in a basket of growth international stocks. Right? For that, you're hoping that whoever's managing it is doing a good job watching the market, changing their positions. And it's intangible to me as an investor. I wanted something that was tangible. And for me, it was oil and gas. I have investments in oil and gas. It's tangible, and real estate. So it's very easy to explain to somebody. Well, if I'm going to give you money for your fund, tell me what you do. We purchase international hospitality real estate in some of the most desirable tourist locations throughout the world. And you have the ability to invest in that, get a yield, get a dividend, and become, quote unquote, a part owner.
Absolutely. You know, I found it interesting. Special like SPACs, right?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with those, right?
Sure.
You know, you're investing in those type of companies that are like, well, we'll decide what we're going to go into after we go, you know, go public and things like that. And other crypto where, you know, they potentially don't have any sort of backing. And I'm 100% with you. I want real assets, real things I can actually understand. And real estate has been the staple for many of us for generations. So, I commend you guys for this. I think it's a novel idea. I'm seeing more companies that are going in this direction.
Yeah.
Real quick, I want to hit on a couple personal things.
Sure.
Multiple Ironman triathlete and an avid guitar player. Yeah. I love hearing how those type of things influence you in the business world and how you use your, you know, some of your skills, mindsets, talents, hobbies, and how they impact you in the business world.
Yeah. I mean, the Ironman triathlons were, you know, the big one for me that really were a direct correlation to business. So for an Ironman triathlon, for anybody that doesn't know, it's a 140-mile race that they give you 17 hours to complete. It's a 2.5-mile open water ocean swim. It's then a 112-mile bike. And then you get off the bike and you run a marathon, which is 26.2 miles. I did my first one. I signed up for it and I had never run before. I didn't own a bike and I didn't know how to swim. Jeez. And I said, you know what would be a really good idea? I remember watching this TV show when I was young and I saw these crazy dudes running through the lava fields of Hawaii. I got online, I researched it, and it was the Ironman Championship in Hawaii. And I signed up, $1,500, which is a lot of money for an entry fee. And then I went out and I found a coach for running, swimming, and biking. And swimming was my worst of the three modalities. I just, I knew how to swim as a kid in my parents' pool in the backyard, but that's not a swimmer. I wasn't a competitive swimmer, high school or post-high school. So I needed to really, really work hard. I was in the pool 4 or 5 days a week, 4:30 in the morning. And in the beginning, a good way to determine if you're getting better at swimming is to figure out how many strokes it takes you to get from one side of the pool to the other in less time. Sounds very logical, but it's an easy measurement. So in the beginning, it was taking me 25, 26 strokes to get across the pool because I was just chopping at water to stay afloat. I became a much better swimmer. I practiced and I got it down to about 15, 16 strokes to get from one side of the pool to the other. And I'll never forget, this was one moment, it was like a light bulb moment in the pool that went off for me, is I understood at that moment that being efficient in the water translates to using less energy, but making up more time. And if you're looking at a financial statement, and you can be efficient on your financial statement with expenses, it's going to translate into more profitability. So that lesson in the pool translated directly to a financial statement when I'm looking at a business now that we want to acquire. So in Portugal, there are a lot of people that went over there in 2020. They had this dream. They wanted to buy a 15-unit apartment building, make it short-term rentals. They do the entire refurb. They rehab it. They go through 2 years of all of that really hard work. And then they figure out they don't know how to run a hotel and they don't know how to run a business, but maybe they're really good general contractors, right? So now they're saying, listen, this isn't for us. We're not in this business. And I can look at that on a financial statement or their revenue statement, see what they've done, see where they're missing it, determine why they're missing it. And I know that immediately day one, I can go in there and be more efficient in the pool, if you will, right? To go back to the sports analogy, than they are with the same exact product. And that's my edge, right? Is being able to find where I can go into an existing property or business with a property management company and find out where the cracks are in their foundation that are going to translate to immediate dollars for our investors so that I can go to them and say, listen, here's the opportunity. Here's what I see. Here's where they're missing it. And it's turnkey. They already did all the work for the last 3 years. They're at 50% occupancy. All of our properties are no less than 97% occupancy 12 months out of the year, not during the high season, 12 months out of the year. And it takes a lot of hard work.
That's incredible. That's incredible. You know, and I think most people would look at, you know, the triathlon and say, yeah, that's impossible. There's no way, you know, unless you were doing that your entire life. And I love how you looked at it and said, yeah, I'm going to do that.
I started, Phil. The reason I signed up for it was because I came back from vacation, right? And I was living high on the hog a little bit more than I should have. I was going out with my buddies. We're going to a steakhouse, having a couple of beers. And I look at the pictures back from vacation. I'm 5'10". I was up to 225 pounds.
Jeez, yeah.
And I was like, "Jeez, this is no bueno, right? I got to figure something out." Yeah. And the next day I signed up for an Ironman and 10 months later I did one. So yeah. There is no can't.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I love it when people balance success. It's not just financial. It's not just business. It's in all aspects of their life, right? And
yep.
You can explain that as well. So we're coming to the end here for our audience that's listening. Where can they find you and participate in what you have got going on?
So the best way to get me is on LinkedIn. And if you just look for Daniel Daly, I'm one of the only ones on there. You will find me. Our two companies are Aim High, which is a consulting firm that we're working with automotive dealerships to implement those same achievements that I did previously. And it's aimhighnow.com. And then the second one is the International Real Estate Investment Company. It's Global Investment Partnership. And the address is globalipllc.com. You can send in the contact. You can DM me on LinkedIn. Either way, I'll get back to you within 20 minutes. And I'm happy to have a conversation with anybody that's interested in anything that we're doing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dan. We appreciate you sharing your story, all of the advice, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in. And please join us next time for the Success Is. Until then, remember, success isn't just a destination. It's the freedom to design your life around purpose and passion.